is Stan Teresens, hashtag STR Ask Podcast. I'm Amy Hall, and I'm here with Greg Kokel, and we are here to respond to your questions, whatever they might be. Mm-hmm. We find a wide variety of them out there.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Greg. So here's one that's particularly relevant for right now, Greg. This one comes from John. Is it immoral for a Christian to use vaccine created from embryonic stem cells from aborted fetuses? I maintain it's not. Specifically and biblically, I would cite the examples of Joseph and King David's murder of Uriah. What man meant for evil, God works for the good.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair assessment, as long as we qualify that the babies are not being aborted to create a commercial product. All right. If the babies were being aborted for the purpose of creating a commercial product that we benefited from, then I think it would be a harder call. All right. Now, this kind of question came up just after the Second World War, because the kind of grotesque medical experiments that people like Joseph Mengele did at Auschwitz, for example, actually produced scientific information or evidence that was helpful. On hypothermia, for example. And some people felt that because it came from that source, it was corrupt and should not be used or taken advantage of, all right? And that's not my view. I think that a person who takes advantage of something that came from that kind of circumstance there's a redemptive element there. Something good has come out of it. They are not participating in the behaviors that produced the information. All right. So there's no kind of connection morally between it. Now, people feel sullied themselves in circumstances like that. Then I think they should follow their conscience and not sully their souls by doing something they think is wrong. But on the main, I think there's no moral connection between those two, and I think that would be the case here. So vaccines that come from the source aren't, I think, morally problematic. And by the way, you know, human bodies that are used for human necropsy, not research, but you know, for med students, and that's when they go down. I had a girlfriend when I was at Michigan State University many moons ago that was in a medical profession, and I visited her down in the human necropsy lab, and there were all of these dead bodies laying on slabs being sliced and diced by medical students. Okay, that was part of their learning. Where did these bodies come from? They came from the morgue. Because these oftentimes were people who were murdered whose bodies were never claimed. They were indigents or whatever. But now these bodies that are the result of a crime were being used to help medical students in their education. All right. I mean, most people would not consider that suspect, but I think that there's a parallel here. Even though the body is dead because of a criminal act, the dead body still can be used for something good. In this case, for medicine, or somebody who's murdered and the organs are donated, for example. There's a person who gets the liver of a murdered man doesn't somehow, you know, is not corrupted by the fact that the liver that gives him life is from a person whose life was taken in that way. So I think that's a fairly straightforward way of looking at that.
Yeah, Greg, I think in one way to look at this is that the organ donation parallel. If it was the case that a baby was aborted and then the organs were used by people to save their lives, that's organ donation is acceptable in the case of murder, as you said. However, where it gets tricky is when the person who is doing the killing is also benefiting from the organ donation. So if there were a case where, let's say like the Planned Parenthood videos from a few years ago, where it turns out that Planned Parenthood was benefiting financially from mm-hmm. selling fetal tissue to researchers, which, of course, encourages them to do more abortions and to promote abortion and to do abortions in certain ways so that they can get certain tissues from that abortion. That is when I think it starts to get mm-hmm. really dicey. And there could be vaccines that are benefiting from that kind of thing, which would mean that it was actually increasing abortions. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's a vaccine that benefits from cells from abortions that happened 50 years ago, that's quite a different thing because you're not encouraging new abortions by the use of that cell line as you might be with a vaccine that uses fetal tissue based on what we've seen Planned Parenthood benefiting from financially from selling fetal tissue.
Yeah, the hard part is you never know where – let's say you've got – fetal tissue that's being used for research and creating vaccines, and some of it comes from an corrupted source, so to speak, and some comes from a corrupted source. Well, it's all kind of mixed together, and you don't know. And so, I mean, in circumstances like that, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt, the moral doubt, to the procedure because of the great good that is coming from it. Partly because you can't parse those things out. Now, let me give you another more clear case example, and this is an organ donation example. There are occasions where people are kidnapped and their kidneys are taken from them. There's a movie about that that trades on this premise. I can't remember the name of it. But they're kidnapped and they are sedated. Then they have a kidney removed and then they're left in a tub of ice water in order to help preserve their life so they don't die. And then they can get medical help afterwards. But then the kidney sold in the black market. That happens. Now, that kidney was stolen from someone at their cost for the purpose of selling to someone else. That's an entirely different circumstance in my view.
Than just regular organ donation, is that?
Correct, yeah.
Oh, right,
yeah. Because the person has his kidney stolen from him for the purpose of the black market sale of the kidney. And he's not just donating it. It's against his will. You know, it's stolen. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. That's a very different situation.
Right. So anything that – and some of this just takes some wisdom and research if you know, someone wants to look into all this. So anything that would increase – like that situation, anything that would increase something evil would be something we would want to avoid. One thing, another distinction I want to make is between embryonic stem cells and fetal tissue. So in most cases, if scientists are experimenting on embryonic stem cells, what they're doing is creating human beings and then destroying those human beings to use their cells, because it's usually from the very beginning of you know, right after conception.
Well, their embryonic stem cells are all pluripotent, mm-hmm. and that's right at the very beginning. That's what gives them their alleged value for research. And that, mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. That's totally different. This is cloning done to create a human being for the purpose of destroying the human being. The irony is, it is actually against the law to clone to create a human being to let the human being live, but it is legal to clone the human being or to create a real human being through a cloning process, I guess is the better way of putting it, and then to take the life of that human being for the purpose of research. It's completely
right.
upside down.
So in the case of an embryonic – where using that product and using those remedies is actually contributing to creating human beings to kill them for research, I think that's different than – that's like one step beyond having some sort of therapy or something that results from fetal tissue after the child has already been killed and not for the sake of the fetal tissue, because usually – I mean, I don't know of any case where people are actually
having babies and sell their fetuses for research. Yes.
Right. So that's somewhat different.
But that's what happens in vitro fertilization with embryonic stem cell research. And the way to avoid this is to just make embryonic stem cell research illegal. That's it. And cloning are legal unless if you're going to create a human being through the cloning process, you allow the human being the chance to grow and live a full life. And, of course, that nobody wants to do that, at least at this point. Genetic engineering questions aside for the moment. That's coming, but it's not, you know, we're on the threshold, but we're not in the midst of that right now.
And Greg, you just brought up something else to mind. If a researcher is taking embryos that have already been created for in vitro fertilization, I even have a problem with that because I think that is also giving incentive to the fertilization doctor who is creating more than he should. So
in other words, more embryos than a mother can reasonably carry at any given time.
Right.
There's always an excess. So what do you do with the excess? Well, let's just sell them on the market kind of thing,
right,
as opposed to donate them so that other childless couples might have them implanted and give the embryo a chance, that little human being a chance at life.
Right. I'm against human research of any kind that kills the human being.
Yeah, and that's the difference with the cadavers. They're already dead for another reason. Mm-hmm. In this case, the humans that are frozen are then their lives are terminated as a result. For the sake. That's right. Research. Good.
So as a follow-up question, I wanted to clarify one thing. This one comes from Stanford Mogg, and he says, do you think there are ethical objections to taking the COVID vaccine, given that it employs cell lines drawn from aborted fetuses? And I just want to clarify there that the COVID vaccine did not employ any cell lines in the making of the vaccine. So there were no cells used in the making of the vaccine. They did use a cell line that came from the death of a baby like 50 or 60 years ago. And they don't even know for sure that it came from an aborted baby. It might not have been aborted.
Yeah.
But that cell line that has just kept going all this time, they used that cell line to test it, but it's not actually part of the vaccine and it wasn't used to create the vaccine, only
to
test.
Well, that's interesting facts. I didn't know that. A cell line is where you have cells that you just keep reproducing in vitro in the petri dish, so to speak, and then they become, it's like sourdough, I guess, you know, you got the batch and it keeps kind of reproducing itself, and that's what's meant by a cell line.
Yeah, so you don't need to worry about any sort of fetal tissue being in either the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccines because neither one of those uses that. It was only the cell line to test. And I think it's ethically acceptable to do it in that way. What are your thoughts on that specifically?
Well, no, I think it's the same falls in the same category of our earlier question. I do think there's an ethical concern if the government or sub-government agencies, when I say sub non-government agencies, private agencies require vaccination in this particular case. And like everybody's got to get vaccinated. No person is obliged to take any medical care that they don't want to. This is a foundational liberty of anyone. You go to the hospital and they say you got cancer. If you don't get chemo, you're going to die in a month. You could say, I don't want chemo. I'm just going to go. In fact, that's what happened with my mother-in-law, her second round. She said, I'm just going. Of course, she was in her mid-90s when she said that. But but in this case now, there's a lot of talk about forcing people to take a medical procedure, okay? And they say it's so you can protect other people. But of course, that kind of argument, whether it's I think it's questionable in terms of its legitimacy, because tens of thousands of people die every year by the flu, and there is no requirement for every person to get a flu shot to keep from passing flu on to an elderly person who might die of it. We don't apply that rule there. This particular issue has been radically politicized. And so even if the government doesn't require it, companies may require it. And I don't think that's legitimate either. You can't work for us anymore unless you get So what's the difference whether the government make this illicit claim on somebody or some private venture does and say, we're going to fire you and we're going to remove your means of livelihood because you won't take this injection? And this is a terrible, terrible state of affairs. But this is where we're headed.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Let's change to a radically different topic now. But this one comes from KJ. I have toxic parents who've been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. I currently have no contact with them. However, my church is telling me that I'm not honoring them by not having them in my life. What does the Bible teach us about honoring parents?
Well, this is an interesting question. First of all, it just occurred to me, narcissistic personality disorder, you know. It's just amazing how – and I don't know anything about this or disorder. I'm just thinking about what I just heard. And it's amazing how many things nowadays that were in the past just considered bad character are now somehow reduced to a medical condition. You know, like you get measles. Nobody chooses measles. There's no moral responsibility. So now you have a narcissistic personality disorder, which means you're exceptionally self-centered, but you're not. It's not a vice. It's just a sickness. You know, I'm just throwing that out. You know, and maybe there is such a thing that is legitimate. However, the real question is, how do you deal with somebody there? And I think that cutting the person off entirely is not an example, is not fulfilling the responsibility to honor. After I became a Christian, I'd had actually a very rough emancipation from my dad when I was 19 years old. And pretty much by that time, at 20, I was completely on my own. I never – actually, after I graduated from high school, I never got a dime from my folks. They never signed off on any loans. They never paid for my insurance. They never bought me a cell phone. You know, they never did anything for me. And I just made my way, but which was – turned out to be really good for me, I think, and satisfying. But after I became a Christian, about 3 years – after this break, and I had no contact at all with my dad for about 3 or 4 years. After I became a Christian, I realized I had a different obligation, and that it was I was obliged to honor my parents. And so I made it a regular habit to contact them, like once a month, make a phone call and just check in, and to show them deference and to show both my dad and my mom, who were divorced at that point, honor. I didn't do it because I liked them or that it was fun or enjoyable. I did it as an act of obedience to God, to honor my parents. And my dad was especially difficult in that regard. Now, he ended up becoming a Christian a year and a half before he died at 72 years old. So it was amazing what God did, because he was a union leader in Chicago, you know. So he was like a vice president of a labor union in Chicago. He was a tough guy. So it was interesting how God got a hold of him and had an absolutely genuine conversion. It was a real transformation. Because of the personality differences, it was hard to want to engage. Nevertheless, I did, out of a responsibility to honor my parents, and I think that was the right thing to do. I don't know why, you know, a certain person who's deeply narcissistic, they're unpleasant to be around, obviously, but I don't see how that disqualifies any contact or means it makes it we can't be around them. Wow, that's so unpleasant. Well, what does that have to do with it? Now, if it's dangerous, if you're in their presence and they're violent, well, that's something different. They call them on the phone, you know, but and just write it out. So,
yeah, I don't think we have an out just because our parents are not good people. There are ways that you can honor them. As you said, Greg, just contacting them is a way of honoring them and treating them respectfully, no matter what. And something that might help you, KJ, is maybe you can get some counseling, because if they are, if there's some issue with they're manipulating you or in some way distressing you all the time, then maybe you can figure out how you can better respond to that and deal with that as you have your contact. And you don't have that, having contact doesn't mean you have to enmesh your lives in your life and theirs.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to do that. And maybe a Christian counselor can help you work through all of these things, but especially how to respond to them so that you can be firm in whatever your convictions are or whatever kind of boundaries you need, while at the same time still acting respectfully towards them.
Yeah, you can send them a Christmas card. You can send them birthday cards. You can send them Father's Day cards, you know, or Mother's Day cards or whatever. Those are all the kinds of things that one can do in a gracious fashion that are examples of honoring. In fact, in 1 Peter and maybe other places too, I think Jesus says the same thing, but 1 Peter chapter 2, somewhere around there, Peter says, look at, if we're nice to people who are nice to us, how are we different from anybody else? That's just kind of ordinary fallen people can do that. It's when they're not nice to us and we overcome evil with good that we stand out. Incidentally, I don't know, Amy, this could just be me, but it strikes me that there is a pandemic right now of narcissistic personality disorder. It's catching.
I think you can, you might need help in navigating this, because I don't know, when you say narcissistic personality disorder, KJ, I don't know exactly what that involves or what it means for you. So someone who's better acquainted with that might be able to help you navigate this a little more and figure out what it can look like for you to be respectful and honor them while still protecting yourself however you need to.
Yeah, so we're going to have a conversation today with a friend of mine who's a high school teacher in Texas, also a graduate, I think, of the MA Phil program. He was in the program, I'm sure, if he graduated, but sent me a letter recently. And narcissism, deep, thoroughgoing narcissism, is almost a universal characteristic of our culture right now, especially the young people. I mean, it sounds like a brutal way of putting it, but that's, I think, accurate.
So maybe we all need to learn how to deal with this.
Yeah, right, right. We all need to keep developing the ability of overcoming evil with good, which ain't easy. I'm just saying.
No.
Especially with members of your own family. You're welcome.
That is the big question of the day, how to do that. And something I'll be thinking about a lot, I think, in the coming months, as will the listeners, I'm sure. Well, thank you, Greg, and thank you, everyone, for your questions. We look forward to hearing you on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.